You get from now on. Luke 8:22-39. I'm gonna read it all out loud, and then we'll break it down. All right, it says this. One day, he, that's Jesus, got into a boat with his disciples, and he said, "Let us go across to the other side of the lake." So they went out, and as they sailed, he fell asleep. And a windstorm came down on the lake, and they were filling with water and were in danger. And they went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're perishing." And he awoke and rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased. And there was a calm. He said to them, "Where is your faith?" And they were afraid, and they marveled, saying to one another, "Who then is this that he commands even winds and water, and they obey him?" Then they sailed to the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. When Jesus had stepped out on land, there met him a man from the city who had demons. For a long time he had worn no clothes and had not lived in a house, but among the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him and said with a loud voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many a time it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles. But he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the desert. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. And they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss. Now a large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him to let them enter these. So he gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and drowned. When the herdsmen saw what had happened, they fled and told it in the city and in the country. Then people went out to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told them how the demon-possessed man had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked him to depart from them, for they were seized with great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. The man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with them, but Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." And he went away, proclaiming throughout the whole city how much Jesus had done for him. All right, so you guys can see why this is like a difficult passage to kind of break down. All right, they would give me the one about demon possession. All right, so, but let's break this down a little bit. Let's see what's really happening here. Because we said our faith is built for reality and meant to be lived out. And we're going to see that kind of unfold as we find out who Jesus is. All right? So the first thing we see here is that Jesus says, "Hey, let's go out on the boat and let's go across the lake to the other side." All right? So the disciples go out on the Sea of Galilee, all right, to cross it. Now, what's interesting about this is you got to remember who the disciples are. All right? A good portion of the disciples were fishermen. And do you know where they fished a lot? The Sea of Galilee. All right? So when it says that they went out to the Sea of Galilee, this wasn't like they didn't know where they were going. All right? They didn't get out there, put up the sails, and be like, "All right, Jesus says go to the other side. Well, I hope we find it." No, they knew exactly where they were going. All right? And when it says there was a storm that came up, they knew that sometimes storms pop up in the Sea of Galilee. All right, any of you guys meteorology majors? All right, is that here at Bucknell? Is that all right? No. All right. I just had to ask because that way you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. All right, but so the way the Sea of Galilee sits in Israel, all right, the winds, all right, there's cool air that come, or excuse me, warm air that comes off the Mediterranean Sea, and then there's cold air that comes in from the east. Well, you know, when cold air and warm air meet up, it usually creates some pretty big storms. Yeah, exactly. All right, so what happens is these storms can pop up like that. All right, it can be like totally good, and then the next minute, you know, a storm is bearing down on them. All right, that's just the nature of where it sits geographically. So for these guys who are really experienced fishermen to be on this lake that they know very well and to have this storm pop up and for them to be afraid for their lives, something serious must have happened. All right, something, and this must have been really bad for them to now be like, we're all going to die. All right? All right, no, and so again, think about the insanity of that, that you're literally like, we're all going to die, that's it. This is it, this is the end. All right, so we know it's a significant storm, and then what do? They go wake Jesus up. Now, when we think about them waking Jesus up, I think a lot of us would probably think, hey, they probably know this is Jesus. If we wake him up, maybe he can do something about this. But when you read it, it doesn't really seem that way. All right, it just says, they go to him and they say, Master, we're perishing. All right, we're all going to die. Wake up so you can die with us. All right, I don't know. Like, I don't know what their point was. Or if it was, maybe they didn't want him to die in his sleep, although that sounds like a better way to go. I'm not sure what their goal was. But it doesn't really seem that they were waking him up in order to stop the seas. All right, see, fear had gripped their hearts. All right, and they had heard all this teaching of Jesus. All right, they had seen all these miracles that Jesus had done. They had learned that, they believed that Jesus was the Son of God. Yet they get to this moment and their hearts aren't full of faith of like, hey, Jesus, come save us. It's Jesus. We're all going to die. Fear had gripped their hearts. And so what does Jesus do? He wakes up, sees the storm. And I love, it just says he rebuked the winds and the raging waves and they ceased. And there was a calm.
It was just
like that. It was gone, calm. And what's fascinating about this is what Jesus says next. He doesn't say, hey guys, what were you thinking? Hey guys, I thought you had this taken care of. Hey guys, why'd you wake me up? None of that stuff. What does he say? Where is your faith? Where is your faith? In the middle of this storm, where was your faith? All right, that's not to say that when storms come up that, that it's not, if we don't have faith that we're like automatically like not Christians or anything like that. But the point is that when we come to those moments of life, those challenges in life, what do we believe? What do we say? We say we believe that Jesus is Lord, Jesus is God, but what do we really believe? And so when push came to shove for these guys in the moment, they crumbled. They fell apart. They had forgotten that Jesus is Lord. Remember, they had seen the miracles. They'd seen people healed. All right, but they forgot that the same God that created the wind and the waves, that when he spoke, the creation still remembered his voice. They forgot who he was. See, we find right here that Jesus is Lord of creation. All right, and that's the reality. That when Jesus spoke, and you see that throughout the Bible, when God speaks, stuff happens. All right? When God speaks, the winds calm down. And then the disciples' reaction was, it says, they marveled, saying to one another, who then is this that he commands even winds and water and they obey him? You see, even though they followed Jesus, even though they had seen all the stuff Jesus had done, they were still wrestling with this, who is he in our life? Who is he to us? And so, For us, then, on this end, we find that we have that same question. Do we believe that Jesus is Lord? All right, because faith and fear, they don't mix very well together. As a matter of fact, they don't mix at all. All right, and so we're usually either fearful or full of faith. All right, they don't really go together. And so for us, as we look at this, we talk about our faith and reality and how it's to be lived out. We got to start asking ourselves, all right, if we believe Jesus is Lord, do I believe that in the reality of every day of my life? If I believe that Jesus is Lord, does what I talk about and how I live my life demonstrate that I believe that and that I worship him as Lord? All right, well, let's keep going here because it gets crazier. So the second story Luke shares, so Jesus is Lord over creation. The second one we're going to see is that Jesus is Lord over demons. All right, so the second story Luke shares, again to demonstrate Jesus' power and authority, is very different than the last one. So it says he crosses the sea, and he comes across this demon-possessed man. All right, so this is like horror movie stuff, right? Right? If you guys ever seen a movie about a demon named Legion or anything like that, this is actually where they get that from. It comes out of the Bible. So, I just want to take like 2 seconds, maybe more like 2 minutes, but to kind of talk about this idea of demon possession, all right? Because and demons as a whole, because there's a couple things that happens here. One, all right, how many of you guys are into horror movies? Any of you guys into that? All right, I got a couple, right? All right, so what happens is horror movies both help, they can like help and hurt, all right? So they hurt us in that when we see like fake demonic stuff in movies, we're like, aha, that's great entertainment. And we can kind of say, oh, well, that's just fake. That's movie stuff. All right, but then the flip side of that is it can really freak us out, right? And we say, you know what? I don't want anything to do with that. So then we act like it doesn't exist. So whichever way you go, all right, we're both sides are kind of saying, all right, this stuff isn't real. We're not even going to interact with that. And especially in our culture, all right, we don't really talk about the supernatural very much. And if we do, we either A, sound crazy, or B, people are like, all right, yeah, you're weird. Nah, just forget about that. Right, but I want to address something here that kind of brings this out. So we have to understand that we live in a material and an immaterial world. All right, that there is a such thing as natural and then supernatural. And when I say supernatural, I don't just mean like the freaky stuff. I mean like that there's a reality that's present that is beyond both our understanding and our sight. And so let me give you an example about how we believe this. But we don't really think about it, all right? So for us as human beings, we're both a body and a soul, all right? Some people would argue that we're body, soul, and spirit, but regardless, all right, there's one part that's material and one part that's immaterial, right? So when we have emotions, all right, we don't sit there we can't see our emotions, we can't measure our emotions, all right? We can't, we can see if someone's really mad, yeah, that person's really mad. All right, we get that part, right? But can't grab a hold of them, right? So we actually are okay in our minds with both a material and an immaterial world, a natural and a supernatural world, but we might not just think about it that way, right? So like if we went into your brain, all right, to look at, how your brain works, we still wouldn't be able to tell who you are. We still wouldn't be able to tell your personality. We still wouldn't be able to tell, all right, the things that you dream about. We can find out that you're dreaming, but we can't tell you what you're dreaming about, right? So there is this immaterial that we believe in, but we haven't quite, all right? But so we believe those realities, that material, immaterial, but then when we get to spiritual things, we're like, oh, okay, we don't believe it. So kind of get that there's this piece going on there that it's happening. So there are, and as the scriptures lay out, there are spirits, all right? There are angels. All right, there's God's angels, and those are fallen angels. That's what we call demons, all right, and that's that supernatural element. So, and as we read this too, the book of Luke was written by a doctor, all right? Now, I'm not sure you guys, but most doctors don't usually do well with, like, making things up, all right? If you tried to do that as a doctor, again, it doesn't usually go very well. What do doctors work in? They work in facts, all right? They work in evidence, right? If you write a journal for medicine, what do you have to do? You have to present your research about this is how it happened. So that's why when Luke writes his gospel, Luke has more facts in his gospel than all of the other gospels. Why? Because that's how he's wired. That's who he is. He's a doctor, and that's why he lays things out this way. So when Luke's laying this stuff out, this is not like Luke saw something weird, so he was like, I think this is what happened. No, Luke's saying, hey, this is what we saw. It might sound crazy, but this is what we saw. All right, this is what happened. All right, so kind of take all that into consideration as we walk through this. All right, so Jesus gets off the boat. The demon possessed man comes up, and he cries out. So he initiates it first. What do you have to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you not to torment me. Now this is fascinating. All right, how you guys picture demon possessed people? But look how he's described here a little bit later on. It says he was. He had nor wore no clothes, had not lived in a house, but among the tombs. All right, and he was crazy. He was kept under guard and bound with chains, but he would break them and then run out into the desert. All right, so when I see that, and I'm trying to picture that, I mean, how many guys have seen or watched Live PD? You guys into that at all? All right. See, man, we're like, that's a couple for you. That's good. All right. So Live PD is a show where they follow cops and they go different things. And what I've really found is that being a cop is like being like a parent for adults that don't know how to handle themselves. It's really fascinating. Because I've watched it and been like, I've said that to my kids. Oh, man, arrest him. Throw him away. All right. Sometimes on the show, as they're going to different places, one of the things you'll find is they'll go and find someone that's really heavily under the influence of multiple different kinds of drugs, sometimes multiple drugs at the same time. And what you find in that is that because they've given themselves over to drugs and given their mind over to that and given really their heart over to that as well, they begin to act crazy. They begin to seem crazy. All right, so I don't know if this man was under the influence of drugs as well, but what I know is this, is that what you give yourself over to, all right, what you put in your heart and in your soul, all right, is what comes out. All right, Proverbs 4:23, all right, Solomon, wisest man who ever lived, said, guard your heart above all else, for out of it flows the wellspring of life. All right, and the reason he said that is because whatever is in there, it comes out. So if we give ourselves over to things that are evil, all right, then that's what's going to come out. And so apparently this man had gotten to the point where he had given himself over to different things and eventually gave himself over to an evil spirit and allowed that to come into his life. But what we find is that this demon comes up and he says, again, he says, what do you have to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? So some things I want to point out about this that revealed to us this relationship, really more about who Jesus is. The first is that, notice the demons that are in this man, they know who Jesus is. They know who Jesus is. All right? They walk up. All right? They're not like, who are you? All right? No, they come up. Jesus, what do you have to do with us, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? All right? Remember, Jesus, for a lot of people around him, that hadn't even been revealed to them yet, as we find out in the scripture. But yet the demons, they know exactly who he is. All right? And they believe that Jesus is God. They believe that. All right? And they act like it. That's part of their reality. They're scared of Jesus because they believe that he's God. All right? So they have a faith to a certain extent, right? That they believe Jesus is God. All right? And they know who Jesus is. They believe that he has authority over them. Because look at what they say. Hey, don't send us into the abyss, Jesus. All right, so they recognize Jesus has the authority to do that. And they're afraid of him. Again, that tells us something about Jesus and who he is. And it also tells us something about what the demons believe. The demons believe in eternal punishment. They say, Jesus, don't send us to the abyss. Right? Don't send us there, Jesus. We know that you can. We know it's real. We're afraid of it. Don't send us there. All right? And so they believe in Jesus, but they don't worship him. You see where this is going. There's a difference between the two. They actually believe that God is real. They believe that Jesus is real. They believe that there's a heaven and a hell. They believe that all of that is real, but yet they don't worship him as God. All right? And so actually, it's in the book of James, all right, James actually writes, he says that even the demons believe in God and shudder, right? That they're afraid, but they believe who God is. All right, so that should challenge us in our faith. The next thing we kind of see in this story is that look what happens in this man's life. Look at how Jesus transforms this man's life. And what's crazy about it is too is the man comes up and as the demons are speaking out of him, you don't see the man coming up saying, "Heal me." The man doesn't come up and say, God, I need you to take this out of me. He doesn't, but Jesus knows his need before he even asks. Jesus sees the need. He sees the hurt. He sees what's going on, the craziness, and he responds and does something about it. All right, so we can see just this element of grace in what Jesus is doing. All right, because why? It's by grace that we've been saved in faith. All right, and what happens? What happens to this man as Jesus casts the demon out? All right, it comes back and it says that he was clothed and sitting at the feet of Jesus. Right? And that idea of sitting at the feet of Jesus is a sign of worship. Right? Jesus, you are great. You are wonderful. Thank you for saving me. All right, I sit at your feet. And you know what's crazy is the people that were watching all this stuff going on, you know what it says? It says they were afraid. They saw this man that now had that was running around naked in the graveyard, acting crazy, saying random stuff, probably yelling at people walking by. And they saw him quietly with clothes on, sitting at the feet of Jesus, and they were afraid. They were scared of their own. So scared. In fact, what does it say? It says, they said, Jesus, get out of here. You got to leave. We can't. Whatever you're doing, we don't want anything to do with it. You're scary. You need to go. You see, that's the kind of transformation that Jesus brings. All right? That's what happens in his grace. That's the kind of healing that salvation and forgiveness brings. It brings spiritual, emotional, and physical healing in this man's life. You know, all by the grace of God. So what we find is, the reason they're afraid is because Jesus has power over demons. Jesus is Lord over the demons as well as creation. So you see this theme here, Jesus is Lord. And if our faith was built for reality and meant to be lived out, right, then that means some things for our lives. Right, it means some things for our lives. I know in the end of the passage, we don't have time to talk about the herd of pigs. That's actually a whole theological thing unto itself that we don't have time for. We can talk about it later if you want. I know everyone loves to talk about pigs. So it's Friday night. You guys want to talk about pigs, right? All right, cool. We see the man. He actually comes to Jesus and says, I want to go follow you. I want to follow you. I want to worship you. And the guy, Jesus tells him, he says, go out. Go back home to your town and tell people all that you've done. So you imagine this guy? He goes back. Says, hey, remember me? I'm the guy that was naked in the graveyard. All right, now look at me. What happened to you, Jesus? What changed? Jesus changed me. Well, why do you go around and tell people about this now? He goes, because that's what I want you to know who Jesus is. So this guy actually becomes a missionary. His faith actually goes from no faith to this faith that it is into action. All right, he didn't go to Bible school. He didn't learn. He didn't even have a Bible, probably. All he had was this story of his own life that was powerfully changed by Jesus, and he goes out and starts telling it. There's no magic, no I learned, the Romans wrote. I learned all these fancy verses here. No, he just goes out and shares a story. So this is what I was like. Jesus came. He did this. This is me now. And you can see that. And so through this all, again, as we've talked about faith being in reality and lived out in our lives, I want to wrap up with this idea that believing in Jesus and worshiping Jesus as Lord are two different things. You saw that a little bit in that story with the demons, but believing Jesus as Lord and worshiping Jesus as Lord are two different things. So you guys are in a spot right now where a lot of what you're doing in school is all up here. All right? The hard part, actually, is taking what's up here and getting it out into reality. All right? Getting out into actually being able to do it. All right? Because even on all your papers, all right, I remember, all right, I wrote, my degree was in student ministry. All right? And I remember I wrote all these papers about how my student ministry was going to be the best student ministry because I knew what I was doing. And then I got out and found out it was really hard. And people are hard to work with. And ministry can be hard thing. And it was not even like anything I learned. And it's the same thing with our... I probably could have saved some money that way too. But that's neither here nor there. But what I found is that what I believed and what I had learned, if it just stays up here, that's all it is. What we believe has to get worked into our reality. It has to get worked into what we believe about the world and how we live in it. Because without that, it's just knowledge. It's just, the Bible for us becomes another textbook amongst the many. All right, it becomes another, maybe, things of nice sayings to get us through the week. All right, God's not interested in that. God is interested in us. We don't worship a God that is dead. Jesus is not still in the grave. All right, the story doesn't end with the cross. All right, it It ends with the gospel ends with the resurrection, right? Jesus is alive. He's living. He's active. The same Jesus that calmed the seas and cast these demons out is alive today, right? That same Jesus that's Lord of those things is Lord today. And so as we think about that, the question for us then becomes, do we worship Jesus as Lord? Is Jesus the Lord of your life, the Lord of your heart? Not just believing in him, but do you worship him? And let me give you an analogy real quick that will hopefully bring this like all around. So when we talk about worship and what it means for Jesus to be Lord of our life, I want you to picture your life for a second like the solar system. All right, you know, the sun's in the middle, all right, and then all the planets revolve around it, all right? So if that's your life, whatever is in the middle of your life, whatever's in your heart, right? Whatever, when we talk about heart, we're not talking about, you know, just your emotions. We're talking about your emotions, your will, your intellect, all of those things that make you you. All right? If that's the heart of the solar system, then whatever is in that heart is whatever everything else will revolve around. So whatever's there in the middle, everything else is going to come out of that, so to speak. Right? So if the most important thing to you in the world is to be successful, right, that's going to drive everything else that circles around it. All right? If the most important thing to you is to love and to be loved, all right, that's going to drive everything that comes out of that. All right? If the most important thing to you is your schoolwork and your grades, that's what's going to come out of that. Right? So whatever is in the core, whatever's in the middle, is central, is what everything else revolves around. So to say that we worship Jesus, say that Jesus is Lord of our life, means that we whatever is in the middle is taken out, and we give access to for Jesus to come into that part of our life and reorient the solar system. You can see that this isn't just like, yeah, I believe in Jesus, he's one of the things in my life. No. Jesus is the center, needs to be the center, and everything else revolving around it. And so if we're to say Jesus is Lord of my life, we're saying Jesus is the center and everything else revolves around it. Actually, when I was in college, which wasn't that long ago, don't pick on me too much. I know I have 4 kids now, but it wasn't that long ago. I remember my sophomore year of college, I started dating this girl, and that can be a problem. So I started dating this girl, and it was the most destructive 8-9 month relationship ever, but it was up there. And it was yelling, fighting, manipulating one another. It was bad. And the reason it was bad wasn't because I like hadn't figured out the secret to dating, all right? Wasn't because I was dating the wrong person, all right? There is no such thing as the one, or anything like that kind of stuff, all right? The reason that the relationship didn't work is because at that point in my life, I had made the center of my life to find someone to love me. I had made her the center of my life. The problem with that is that other people weren't meant to be the center, all right? They can't handle that weight. We can't handle that weight for another person. Only Jesus can handle that. And so what happened is everything else in my life began to revolve around her, or in me getting from her what I wanted, or her trying to get that from me, and all the different complication things that go in relationships. But the bottom line of it was my worship was messed up. We can try to fix all the relationship things and everything else, but my worship was messed up. And in order to get to a place where that was gone, I actually had to take that out before Jesus could come in. And I think that's the part that we miss. See, Jesus wants to be in the center of your life. Jesus wants to bring you great joy and peace and all of those things that come along with knowing God. But a lot of times we're not willing to take what's there and put Jesus and allow Jesus to come into that spot. And so I wonder for you guys tonight, would you have the courage Do you have the courage to come to God and say, God, this is what's here. My value for success, my need to be loved, whatever the case might be. God, this is what's here. Would you take it and come into my life and reorient it so that I might know you more deeply and experience your joy? Because see, again, faith, it has to be brought into reality. Otherwise, it's just knowledge. It's just an understanding. All right? It has to be brought into reality. And so would you have the courage to do that? And if you want to know what's in the center of your life, just look at what you talk about most. Look at what you give your most time and energy to. Or even sometimes, like in this case, I'm sure you give a lot of time and energy to school. I know you don't worship school. Maybe you do, but most people don't. But look at how you do those things. All right? Because sometimes that can be an indicator of, well, as what you worship. But as you ask yourself those questions and you find something else there, are you willing to let God take that and come in and fill that spot in your life? Because that's not just what he wants, but that's how that relationship with God works. See, faith is not just meant to be knowledge. We can learn all about this book. There's actually people that know a great deal about it. The demons know who Jesus is. They believe in him, but they don't worship him. Would you be willing and have the courage to go to God and say, God, I want to worship you with all that I am, with all that I have. And whatever is in there that's not of you has to go. Would you trust God to do that? Let me pray for you, and then I know band's going to sing another song.